Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. One scoop or two? Cup or cone? You can't go wrong with ice cream, whether it's plain vanilla or an exotic mélange of candy and fudge. It's summer, but even when the mercury isn't pushing triple digits, Americans love their ice cream. The average person in the U.S. eats almost 22 pounds each year. And this cool confection has a special power to transport us back to childhood. Soft-serve cones with sprinkles may remind us of strolling the boardwalk. Sundaes topped with maraschino cherries could take us to bygone birthday parties. From the birth of the ice cream truck to the long-standing debate about who invented the waffle cone, the history of ice cream includes pioneers of business, scientific achievement, and flavor. Today, we revisit our conversation with Amy Ettinger, author of Sweet Spot, An Ice Cream Binge Across America. She traveled the country looking back in time at ice cream and other frozen treats like custard and frozen yogurt. When we talked last summer, I asked Ettinger why she undertook the quest to get the scoop on ice cream's history.
It was really an opportunity to look at my own childhood, travel back a little bit in time in my own life. Ice cream has always been my family's obsession. We ate it all the time as a kid. And to take that history and mix it with the history of America, because our obsession with ice cream goes back all the way to our founding fathers. So I wanted to look at how it's impacted my own life, talk about the history of it, and also talk to the people who are working to make it every day.
So you use the word binge in your title, An Ice Cream Binge Across America. It's really a bit of a memoir.
It is. There's definitely memoir in there, and it's my own personal experience of going out and talking to the folks who are making it all over the country. And it did feel like a binge, both in the calories consumed and the reporting legwork that I did.
Well, do you feel better having written it?
I do. I had a lot of fun writing it and a lot of fun reporting it, and I met some fantastic characters along the way.
Yeah, you did, and you've written about many of them. Making ice cream from scratch is a very fraught process. You've chased the white whale of the perfect batch. What can go wrong when you're making your own ice cream at home?
Everything. Everything can go wrong, and it has gone wrong for me. So you can learn from my mistakes. But one of the biggest flaws in a home ice cream is when it just becomes that icy block when you put it in the freezer overnight. You know, you've made this delicious batch, maybe it's your grandma's old recipe, and you took out the ice cream maker and you sat down and you figured out how to make it, and then you set it in the freezer overnight and it just turns into a big block of ice cream. That is one of the most common flaws that can happen.
What did you do wrong to make that happen?
So the thing that can counteract that horrible icy block is adding a little bit of nonfat milk powder to your ice cream. Most home chefs don't do that, but they do it in ice cream shops across America. So you add a little bit of nonfat milk powder, it absorbs all that water, and you don't wind up with that horrible block.
So the water content of the milk, instead of turning into ice, turns into more milk.
Exactly. And it becomes that scoopable ice cream that we all know and love.
Okay, so that's one mistake you can make. What's your second worst mistake?
So I suffer from horrible impatience in my life, not just with ice cream, but it comes out with ice cream. When you are, you know, pasteurizing your ice cream base on a stovetop, and then you set it in a bowl to cool, and then you think, oh, I think it's cool enough. It's been an hour or so, and you put it through the ice cream maker. It just never becomes what it's supposed to become because it's not really cold enough, and all the molecules haven't come together the way they're supposed to. So giving it a little time to sit overnight in the refrigerator is one of the other keys in making good ice cream. It's, you just want your base, that ice cream base of milk, sugar, cream, eggs, to become what it's supposed to become in the refrigerator, and then you can put it through the ice cream maker, and it becomes ice cream.
So you're talking overnight. This is not a quick
overnight, which is really hard. I think good ice cream, when you're making it at home, it's like a 2-day process. It really is, because after you're done putting it through the ice cream maker, you want it to freeze in the freezer. And I think that the impatience really sets in. People, you know, especially if you've got kids and they're like, "Can I just want that ice cream, you know, I helped you make it or I watched you make it." But if you can just be patient, it's really delicious.
Words to live by. You write that some of the founding fathers were essentially addicted to this sweet treat.
They really were. I mean, starting with George Washington, he ate ice cream all the time at his formal functions in New York and Philadelphia. He had a 306-piece ice cream set that was found in his estate at Mount Vernon after he died. And he went through the great process of having ice houses built at his estate at Mount Vernon. And it was not easy back then. So he was really the first American president with an addiction to this ice cream. But Thomas Jefferson had it as well. He picked up his addiction in France. And he came back and he recorded America's first ice cream recipe, which was for vanilla. And he also had ice houses built at his estate, and he would get, you know, enormous amounts of ice brought into those ice houses so that he could have his ice cream and other treats whenever he wanted.
I alluded to the big debate over who invented the ice cream cone. It seems to come down to two immigrants, one from Syria, one from Italy.
Yes, but most folks point to the Syrian immigrant at the 1904 St. Louis Expo as being the person who was, you know, next to an ice cream maker. He was making waffles or a pastry, and he said, you know, what would happen if I made this waffle into a conical shape and tried to scoop some ice cream on top of it? But when I was doing this research for the book, that was one of those little facts of history that really blew my mind, that it took until 1904 until somebody actually did invent this cone, which allowed people to, you know, take a scoop and then be able to walk down the street with it. And it became so popular because of that.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with writer Amy Ettinger about her book Sweet Spot and the history and future of ice cream in America. Ice cream trucks and their tunes are a quintessential part of summer. The Smithsonian even has on display a 1938 Chevrolet truck that delivered Good Humor ice cream. How does the ice cream truck capture American innovation in technology and business?
Well, it really allowed the ice cream to come to the masses. And Good Humor is really credited with the company to revitalize the image of these ice cream trucks or ice cream peddlers. Before Good Humor, ice cream truck folks sort of had a bad reputation. They had a seedy reputation. And that company came along, you know, we all think of the Good Humor man with the button-down shirt and the white hat. And the image around it really changed.
And this was
folks
about when?
Around the 1920s.
Uh-huh.
And then after the war in the 40s, so many Good Humor man came and started their own trucks, their own routes across America. And it changed our perceptions of having something delivered to our doorstep, a food that's delivered to us. I mean, it's so common these days, but it was really uncommon back then. And they really were the innovators in terms of doing that.
And the technology involved originally then back then, there wasn't refrigeration in the truck. It was just ice, right?
Yes. And then the dingling sound was really just like a bobsled bells originally, you know, back in the 1920s. That's how he came up with that dingling sound for calling everybody's attention. They were bells. So it moved from that to being able to prepare things on the truck and have refrigeration on the truck and then have a real system for, you know, blaring music or jingles or whatever you want to blare to get folks' attention.
Many listeners might be surprised to learn a secret you uncovered, that most companies buy the base of their ice cream from other companies. You told us earlier that base is what? Milk, sugar, egg,
cream.
And
yes.
Cream.
And most cases, eggs. Philadelphia has they're known for an eggless style ice cream, but most places in the country use egg in their ice cream base. That was really a shocking moment for me when I uncovered that. I was just sitting down with an artisanal ice cream maker who revealed to me, yeah, you know, we're artisanal, but we do not make our own base in the back of our kitchen, nor do most places in America. There are very, very strict pasteurization laws in this country, and it's prohibitively expensive in most cases for small mom and pop shops to A, buy a pasteurizer, and B, to have a permit to have that pasteurizer. So folks buy pre-made ice cream base from different companies around the country, and then they put their own signature on it by adding their own flavors or mix-ins to really make it their own.
So you just said you were shocked to hear that. In your book, you called it a betrayal, a sense of betrayal. Have you changed your mind about that?
No, it still feels that way. It really is so surprising to me that a company can call itself homemade or artisanal where there's so much of the actual product that is pre-made. So I think it's something of like truth in advertising. I think if places were a little bit more upfront with the fact that they are being creative, but within the confines of having to use pre-made or pre-packaged ingredients, I would feel a little differently. But there's a lot of secrecy in the ice cream world. And there's a lot of what they want to leave up to our romantic imaginations. And so it did feel like a betrayal, and it still does a little bit.
When you imagine the perfect dish of ice cream, what is it?
Oh, it's a butter pecan. It's a perfectly rich, creamy butter pecan with no ice crystals and the perfect balance of saltiness and sweet.
Well, on that delectable thought, let me thank you for this conversation.
Thank you.
Amy Ettinger is author of Sweet Spot, An Ice Cream Binge Across America, published by Penguin Random House. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. A quick break, and then we ask members of Ice Cream University about what goes into making a new flavor. Stay with us. Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about one of America's favorite desserts, ice cream. Have you ever imagined creating your own ice cream flavor? What would it be? Creamy caramel or maybe a spin on simple vanilla? What would you add? Ribbons of raspberry jam? Crunchy pecans? Dark chocolate truffles? Maybe all three? Designing an ice cream flavor requires both balance and a sweet tooth. Marketing that flavor requires a whole other set of skills. This is the kind of inside scoop Harford County high school students learn when they take part in something called Ice Cream University at TIC Gums in White Marsh. Last summer, we spoke with Tim Anden. In addition to helping run Ice Cream University, Anden is the business development manager for TIC Gums. The company manufactures ingredients that improve the texture and stability of foods for the food and beverage industry. Anden explained that students start with a Food Science 101 course based on curriculum from Cornell University, Anden's alma mater. Then he told us more about skills gained at Ice Cream University.
Really, we're trying to give students a taste of entrepreneurialism, a taste of really how to go about not only designing a really good ice cream flavor, but also how you go about marketing that. One of the things that we found, we've now been in our fifth year of the class, was that a lot of these high school students maybe haven't necessarily had the opportunity to present in front of not only adults, but their peers and industry experts. We have professors that come down from Cornell and teach a class about how their actual dairy manufacturing plant is run, and you know, we'll teach them about these kinds of things. But you know, it's really an opportunity for the kids to follow an idea from its creation stage. You know, every week they're trying out new flavors at the end of the class, experimenting with different combinations, how much flavor they need to put into the specific ice cream that they're making. And then they go through and try to develop a marketing plan, very much like you said in the beginning of the show, where if they're going to be making some sort of bubblegum style flavor, well, their marketing plan really needs to be targeted towards kids or it's not going to make any sense. And so, you know, we really try to teach kids a lot about that idea creation process and then how to go about pitching that to a larger audience, very much like a Shark Tank for ice cream.
What do students learn about items added in to ice cream with candy, chocolate, fruit. Mm-hmm.
So this is one of the more enlightening parts of the class is I think a lot of people just think that you can take, you know, normal nuts or inclusions, is the technical term, and you can just kind of put them into frozen ice creams and eat them. But a lot of these ingredients have been specifically designed in order to function well and not break any teeth at those really low temperatures. So we talked to him about freezing point depression and how that works to make things, you know, like chewy caramel that you'll sometimes see in ice cream, to actually make it chewy and not rock solid.
What about preventing freezer burn?
So that's actually one of the things that the ingredients that TIC Gum supplies will actually help to control and to address. Obviously, nobody's going to describe ice cream that they like as being gritty or grainy or, you know, having freezer burn. And so things like gums, they come from natural sources like seeds or tree saps. They help to bind up that extra water that would otherwise show up in freezer burn if it's left in a freezer for too long.
You talked about students being exposed to professors who can walk them through a marketing campaign. Part of Ice Cream University is competition. The kids form teams, design mm-hmm. their own flavor, and then present that idea to judges.
Definitely. You know, usually there's anywhere between four or five teams that we've had, just depending on the specific number of students that we've had in the class. But yeah, it's very much a friendly competition, because at the end, the winning flavor is actually then produced at Broom's Bloom Dairy up in Harford County, so that students not only get to, you know, have the enjoyment of having won. One of the things that I think is actually a lot of fun for both parents and students is actually going to a real creamery and seeing their actual ice cream flavor be produced, being able to taste it, and, you know, brag to all their friends and family members that this was something that they actually designed.
I assume there are more kids wanting to attend Ice Cream University than you have spots for. How does someone qualify for Ice Cream University?
So the criteria that we've used, it's really just, we're looking for students from Harford County. We ask for them to maintain at least a 3.0 GPA, but really it's just first come, first serve after that. You know, we're trying to get a good mix of not only science but business students as well, to really try to teach the students that, you know, working in teams, was one of the things we talked about before, but working in teams is something that's really a lifelong skill. And, you know, people are going to have different strengths and weaknesses. Oftentimes the teams that get along the best and have the most diverse group of students amongst them, you know, some folks that are interested in science, some that are maybe interested in culinary, some that are interested in business. Those kinds of teams, because they're diverse, tend to come up with more creative solutions.
That's Tim Enden, Business Development Manager for TIC Gums, here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're speaking about TIC Gums' Ice Cream University program for Harford County high school students. And I want to bring somebody else into the conversation, Whitney LaRoche, a rising senior at Cornell University's food science program. She participated in Ice Cream University when she was a junior at Bel Air High School. Welcome, Whitney.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Whitney, what did you learn at Ice Cream University?
Well, I learned all the things that Tim was saying. We learned about inclusions, we learned about flavoring, formulation, we learned about product development and the marketing side of it.
What did you fall in love with?
Oh, I fell in love with ice cream formulation. Food science just encompasses a whole bunch of things that you just didn't know about, different careers.
Had you been thinking about food science even before Ice Cream University?
I definitely did not even know food science existed until Ice Cream University.
What flavor did your team develop?
We developed Graham Canyon, like Grand Canyon, but Graham Canyon.
So like graham cracker.
Yes, correct.
Tell us about this flavor.
So it was a graham cracker base, and then it was vanilla ice cream on top, flavored with marshmallow.
And what did the judges think about it?
They loved it. I believe we came in second or third.
Yeah, it was a very close contest that year. And I will say that they came up with one of the best names. And this is one of the things that we talk to the kids about, is really naming the product something that's memorable.
You're starting your last year at Cornell.
Yes,
right?
I am.
In the food science program.
Yes.
There. What type of career do you have in mind?
So I'm thinking about broadening food science into either media, or I'm going to enter the food law industry. Not sure yet, but I'm definitely exploring both pathways.
When you say media, what do you have in mind?
So actually, my friend and I are going to participate in Cornell's radio station and come up with our own food critic talk show.
Cool. Food radio. When people go to the grocery store today, what should they
look for if they want to take home the best ice cream?
So any ice cream that is freshly made is always going to be the best. I tell people you're never going to get ice cream that tastes any better than when it's really right coming off the machinery. If you've ever had a tour of Ben & Jerry's, they'll actually give you ice cream that's really fresh right there from the plant. Anything that hasn't gone through a really large distribution channel where it's going to have a bunch of freeze-thaw cycles where it comes from the plant, it sits on a dock before it gets put into a freezer at a grocery store. So really, I would stress finding those good local creameries, and there's many here in the Maryland area. Find those guys. Find where their products are, and almost always those ice creams are going to be far superior to a lot of the nationally recognized brands.
What trends do you see in the freezer aisles or in small ice cream stores?
Yeah, there's a lot of really different trends in the ice cream industry right now, whether it's people going to gelato, trying to get a much more indulgent experience that way, or if they're going in the direction of Halo Top, that is really coming out with a low-calorie ice cream that has a lot of the same textural attributes that regular calorie ice cream has. So, there's really been a lot of diversity in the food industry and in ice cream specifically, trying to meet a lot of different consumer demands, whether it's for clean label or whether it's for other associated health concerns like non-dairy ice creams. There's been a huge resurgence in non-dairy ice creams that, there's been a lot of actually good non-dairy ice creams out there that, we've worked with a lot of these companies, and it'll blow you away to taste some of these. You'd never even know if someone didn't tell you that it wasn't dairy.
I'm not familiar with non-dairy ice creams. What are they made of?
So a lot of times they'll use different kinds of nuts as the milk source. One of my personal favorites is the ones that are based on cashews. Cashews have a high fat content, and so they lend themselves very well to performing similarly to traditional dairy fat ice creams. So really, those products are some of my personal favorites, and I have maybe a little bit of a personal story about it. When my wife was pregnant, she was having some reactions to dairy foods, and so we had to kind of try to find out some alternative for her, and we actually ended up finding a specific kind of cashew ice cream that, if I didn't tell you, you would never know that it wasn't non-dairy.
Well, I wish you luck.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And I appreciate your telling us about Ice Cream University. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila.
Tim Anden, Business Development Manager for TIC Gums, talking about Ice Cream University, and Whitney LaRoche, a graduate of the class. Earlier, we spoke with Amy Ettinger, author of Sweet Spot, An Ice Cream Binge Across America. We have a link to her book at the On the Record page, wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for listening on the record. Come back tomorrow.